Hello, and welcome to the Four Color Nerds Cut the Cord podcast, episode 22. I'm your therapist, Hannah, and I'm joined by some other streaming media nerds, Alistair the social worker.
Hello.
And Ryan the paraprofessional.
Hello.
Together we take on television for those who have cast off the tyranny of their local cable provider. Each week, this treatment team gathers here to find a great show to watch and the often overwhelming variety of shows to choose from and do therapy.
Good God, I hope nobody takes my advice on anything ever.
We review the prior week's selection, then we pick a new show and do it all over again. Lots of reflection of feeling and exploring.
This is a safe space. Feel free to express your opinions.
It may be a safe space for you.
You've gone rogue.
I'm a rogue therapist.
This is a safe space.
He challenges us. He pushes us.
This is a safe space and a review show, so there will be spoilers. If you couldn't tell, this week's show is Netflix's Gypsy. Our companion song is Gypsy by Fleetwood Mac, and let's take a listen.
So I'm back to the velvet, ooh, underground, back to the floor that I love. To a room, some lace, some paper flowers, back to the gypsy that I was, to the gypsy.
Gypsy. I'm appropriating a culture, yeah, with my fringe scarf and cocaine.
The 70s were a different time, for sure.
Oh, definitely. Fleetwood Mac. There was just lots of cocaine and sleeping with one another's husbands and wives. Like, I've seen that behind the music. But they made some fabulous music. Like,
they did.
This song is so great, and this version of it is just so dark and moody. And
she re-recorded a new version of this song for the show.
Fleetwood Mac's a really good band, and if you've never heard them before, you should go and listen to Fleetwood Mac. They're from the past, from when music was still alive.
Yeah. Let's get back to Netflix's Gypsy, y'all. So I was talking about the theme song, and it doesn't really match up with the tone of the show. I think maybe they were trying.
I see that they were stretching to try and reach that's the tone they wanted. That's their aspiration, but the actual reality, like much of the show, the execution falls really short.
Really short. So I guess we'll just get into, I'm just going to name off all of these people, and then we're going to just really lay into them, so...
Yeah, prepare yourself.
There's some growth areas for sure. So it was created by Lisa Rubin, and it's starring Naomi Watts as Jean Holloway, therapist. The character's a therapist, Naomi Watts is not a therapist. She's a 2-time Academy Award nominee. Billy Kudrup as Michael Holloway, her husband. Sophie Cookson as Sydney Pierce, the
millennial temptress.
Carl Klusman as Sam Duffy. Poorna Jugnethan as Lauren Enamdar. And Brenda Vaccaro as Claire Rogers.
It's a talented cast. So yeah. I'm really surprised that the show is so uncompelling.
That it's just so bad. You guys, it's really bad.
Really bad.
It's dreadful.
So let me explain the plot.
Hannah, you can explain the entire arc of the story in about 5 minutes.
There's really not a lot there. Naomi Watts plays Jean Holloway, and Jean Holloway is a therapist. A bad, bad therapist. She's married to Michael Holloway, who's a lawyer guy. He's like a partner in his firm or whatever.
He's like very undefined businessman.
Very important, make lots of money. He goes on trips. This is what we know about him. A good summary is she gets too involved in the lives of her patients / clients. This is the understatement of the year. She has Sam Duffy, played by Carl Klusman, is one of her clients, and he's talking about this relationship he's trying hard to get over and wants her back. Miss Jean Holloway decides to insinuate herself into this situation by meeting up with her client's former lover and pretending to be somebody else, and eventually becomes sexually involved with this young lady.
She's your husband.
The unsexiest sex scenes.
Also some really bad club dancing. It's just the white people-iestic white people dance. Shows lots of scenes of her doing therapy very terribly. Like, I have no idea where this woman received her training because she just does everything wrong. It's awful. It's really, really awful. Like, it's cringeworthy because I literally do what she does as a profession.
Is it like a complete novice outsider imagines what a therapy session would be like and then writes about it badly?
Some of her responses are good. I feel like they did have somebody consulting. I didn't look it up because I don't want to know who that person is. Sometimes I was like, wow, that was a really good response. And then she would follow it up with some like weird question or other. She's very intrusive, and it was very, 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 very obvious, even to a layman, I guess, that she was just taking all of this too personally and seeing herself and her kid and her husband and her mom reflected in all of these people.
This kind of goes to a root cause that I wanted to ask you about, since you have some professional experience with this. It seems to me like it's kind of essential for therapists to keep that distance. And I'm assuming you guys have training and therapy of your own, all of that, to allow you to do that.
At one point, she does attend therapy.
At one point?
She needs a lot more therapy than that. She also meets with colleagues, and there's this one kind of guy who's a little bit more bossy. So those are supervision. They talk about supervision. And that's an important part of being a therapist, because you talk about what's going on with your clients in supervision, and they help you check yourself before you wreck yourself sometimes.
It's a safety net to protect you and them.
And it's also just to keep yourself accountable, because it's a very intimate relationship and you can feel very, very lost in these people's problems. And it's good to have an extra set of ears that you can run things by, because even a good therapist just gets too close to the situation. Tunnel vision, I guess. Not even close in the way that Miss Jean Holloway is. I mean, Dr. Holloway, my bad.
I'm assuming that one of the purposes of supervision, that's what you're calling it, so it's referred to, is also to keep you from, everyone has issues, right? So putting your own issues into their problems.
That's an important part of it. So I had to do several thousand hours of supervised counseling experience before I became fully licensed, meaning I can hang a shingle and do therapy and not check in with anybody and take insurance and take their money and, like, I'm not really accountable to anybody except for the state board. And only then would anything happen if they reported me to somewhere. There's a lot of responsibility involved with being a therapist. And there's a lot of training that you have to go through before you can get out on your own and do things.
Much like any very important job.
Anything where you're responsible for the safety, either physical safety or mental safety of others.
Or the emotional safety. And as we see in this show, it crosses over into their physical safety. Part of supervision, an important part of it, is you come in and you go, this client really reminds me of such and such that happened to me, or they started talking about this thing and checked out because it just reminded me of something, or, you know, whatever. And you do kind of do a little bit of processing of that and practice the skills of bringing your mind back onto your client from whatever weird thing your mind is doing at the time. And it takes a lot of practice.
It's very common when people are listening to someone else that they're not really listening to them, they're formulating their response, and I think that's a bad way to actually listen to someone.
Well, there's the whole thing called active listening, isn't there? I practice this all the time.
Do you?
I do, yep.
Well, so do I. But she doesn't even do the active listening piece.
She looks bored.
Especially when she's talking to the lady who represents mom to her. So I guess we'll kind of get into some terms of the art. Countertransference is a word that we have that's left over from good old Sigmund Freud. Transference is when the client sees their therapist as themselves, or usually a parent figure is kind of what goes on. Or lover, you know, that happens too. And countertransference is when, as the therapist, you see your client as either yourself or a parent or a lover or your child or your husband. So literally all of Jean's clients are aspects of herself or significant relationships in her life.
Is that similar to the way that some parents try and fulfill their desires or unmet goals through their children? They live through that?
Yeah, that's a projection. They're projecting themselves onto their child, is what a Freudian would say.
She's a dreadful therapist.
She's an awful person, very manipulative. You hear hints of her past where she just totally lost control and walked out on her husband and apparently had this little girl with him in order to, like, heal their relationship and start all over, which is a terrible thing to do.
Wait, you mean children don't fix relationships?
No!
What? That's the first time hearing of it.
You would think, like, oh, this should be common knowledge. No, people do this, like, all the time. People who should know better.
She's also a terrible therapist because she's crap at keeping secrets.
Yeah.
How many times does she almost blurt out stuff that came out in private sessions with her patients?
See, and that's the thing. That's part of why we don't get involved in our clients' lives, is because we're a keeper of a lot of secrets, of a lot of...
privileged information.
Well, it's like the seal of confession. I mean, it's the same idea.
I consider it, I mean, almost on the level of being sacrilegious to blurt.
So, the show is a failure, I think we can all agree, but let's talk about why specifically it is a failure. And I have some theories, but I'd like to hear your guys' as well.
Why is shite?
I think it's interesting to see therapists, to see this healer person go bad and go rogue and do all of these really terrible, selfish things. It's an interesting concept. I just think that they really execute it so poorly.
It tries so hard
to be really moody. I think it's really reaching for 6 feet under the wire levels.
This show reminds me of really bad, pretentious junior high poetry. It's trying really hard to be deep and complex, and it's just terrible.
Everything is so predictable, too.
I find that I can't blame the cast of characters. I find myself looking at this, taking it apart department by department. Mm-hmm. So the set dressing is great. They look like really nice places to be, or it looks like a club. The setting and set dressing is fine. The actors, the casting, these are all relatively good or well-known actors and actresses. I can't fault Billy Crudup, who I think is a fantastic actor. Naomi Watts is Academy Award nominee, as it says here.
Mm-hmm.
And we know she's good. So then it kind of narrows it down to a combination of...
Writing and directing.
Yeah, exactly.
I think this is a really good contrast, actually, to House of Cards in terms of the director.
Yes.
David Fincher, I was talking about in our House of Cards episode, how his camera doesn't have a point of view, how he doesn't do the close-up of the thing you're supposed to pay attention to, and there's no mood music that keys up these emotions. And this show is so ham-fisted in the way it does those things that it just screams, pay attention to this. This is important. Feel this way about this thing. It tries to manipulate you so much.
Yes. It doesn't give you any room to feel your feelings about something.
It tells. It doesn't show. It tells you to do the thing rather than show you how it should be.
That's an interesting thing because the pacing on the show is slow and terrible. You would think that if you had slow pacing, you would actually have time for development, but they don't use that time well at all.
You talk about pacing, and it's something I wanted to highlight, especially throughout the series. It's like not a lot happens in this series, and they do build up, but it turns out the build up is just something irrelevant to the story, and you never get a denouement, you know, you never get the final realization or the point, or when it does happen, when this realization has come to, it's kind of treated really cheaply. It's meaningless, it's air, it's vaporous, you know.
I feel like the characters do not seem like real people, so they can't have any weight in their problems, and they're incredibly unsympathetic.
Yeah.
And going back to the idea that they do not seem like real people, their dialogue seems very stilted. In my personal opinion, when you have good acting, it doesn't seem like someone is reciting lines. It seems like you're watching a thing as it's happening. And here it feels like, recite the line, hit your mark, recite the next line. Yes. This feels like a really pretentious Lifetime movie.
Gene Holloway is the horny therapist.
I was going to go with, it feels like really boring reality TV.
Lifetime Movie presents Tell Me More.
I feel like there was a lot of potential that it could be really interesting to explore in depth what that's like and the pressures of it, but it completely misses everything, and it doesn't, nobody's real.
I feel like if I was a Netflix executive, the basic idea is not bad, came to me with the basic idea and said, this is the cast that I have. I've got Naomi Watts, I've got Billy Crudup, will you greenlight this show? I would say yes in a heartbeat, and I would be so disappointed with what I got.
There is absolutely no excuse for the poor oversight that they've had on this. I can't believe how awful it made me feel watching it. So Gypsy got 26% on Rotten Tomatoes. I think that's a very generous score. Jean is so selfish. She only thinks about herself. So to put it this way, everything then becomes about her. Her relationships, her importance is the most important. With her marriage, her bit on the side, her daughter. It's all about her, and she's so selfish.
Again, to contrast this with, I think, House of Cards, which is a leagues better show. They're narcissistic assholes too, but we like them. We are compelled by them and interested in them. And here, it's just not compelling and interesting. Are we ready to rate this thing? I want to have a discussion about good shows in a minute, so let's clear this.
I'll rate it at 0.5 House of Cards.
Can I give it 0 stars, or do I have to give it at least a half?
I think 1 is technically our lowest rating, but you express yourself however you feel comfortable.
Okay.
This is a safe space. There are no wrong answers here. Explore this feeling that you're having.
Explore it. I'm just really, it's like she's the worst. And man, I couldn't even put myself in her shoes enough to be like, oh, this is a warning. It was like, no, I will rate this as 1 out of 5 clients who are probably going to attempt suicide after the dual relationship.
I will give it 1.5. I can't muster the interest to think of something clever.
God.
So, they did announce the Emmy nominations recently, though, and there were some very good shows that we have reviewed on this podcast, and I kind of wanted to highlight some of those.
Let's do it.
Yes!
Here's my advice for you. Don't watch Gypsy, because it's a piece of crap, but listen to this list. Go back, maybe listen to our episode on these shows, or just watch them. You'll be much better off.
This show is like the mystery poo in the therapy couch that you find by accidentally reaching your hand in it while you're picking up after a session.
What happens in your therapy sessions?
I see children. This hasn't actually happened to me. I'm just saying.
So, what wasn't a poo is a show that was nominated for Outstanding Comedy, which is The Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt, which we all enjoyed.
Unbreakable!
Very good. And then also for Outstanding Drama, we've got 2 that we've reviewed. We have both House of Cards and Handmaid's Tale. So I guess my question to you is, which one would you choose? Handmaid's Tale or House of Cards?
Ooh. We're comparing season 1 of Handmaid's Tale to the latest season of House of Cards, correct?
There's no choice.
Handmaid's Tale. That's my pick.
Are you kidding? I'd go House of Cards infinitely higher.
We're not looking at the show as a whole. We're only looking at the latest season.
I think that The Handmaid's Tale was inventive and creative and extremely well acted and directed. I think it said things that needed to be said, so I would go with Handmaid's Tale.
Agreed. House of Cards, I liked the latest season. I mean, we haven't reviewed it yet, but I have my problems with it. Certainly better than the season that came before it.
So, Handmaid's Tale has not 1, but 2 nominations for the Outstanding Supporting Actress category. It's got both Samira Wiley and Ann Dowds, both for Supporting Actress.
Which is quite right, too. They did a fantastic job, both of them.
I think if I had to vote in that, I think I would give it to Samira Wiley. I think she was fabulous in that show. There are moments where she expresses anger and shock that still I can think about.
Yes.
House of Cards, though, also has, as we talked about, not only is it nominated for Best Drama, but it also has nominations for its supporting act. So it's got Outstanding Supporting Actor for Michael Kelly nominated.
Yeah, Doug Stamper.
Don't you think he gets to let his hair down, so to speak, playing this character? Everyone wants to play a villain from time to time.
Oh, well, Kevin Spacey especially. That just kind of seems to be his thing lately.
Who also, every year, has, and this is no exception, has been nominated for Outstanding Lead Actor in a Drama. I do actually like that the Emmy Awards use Outstanding as opposed to Best. I do like that.
I like that.
It's a turn of phrase, but it does indicate everyone's done a good job.
For outstanding lead actress, you've got Robin Wright from House of Cards and also Elizabeth Moss from Handmaid's Tale.
Between the two of them, Robin Wright, she's so subtle.
I think they both have subtlety in their performance.
Yeah, but I think with her, it's just the merest twitch just completely changes the scene.
Because she's so inscrutable. She plays inscrutable very, very well. She could be dressed up in furs or in her swimwear and still hold the same gravitas, that character.
That is a good word to describe her.
Yes. Princess Buttercup has grown up so much.
I know.
And she's amazing in Wonder Woman, too.
Go see that if you haven't seen it. But Elizabeth Moss, like, I would be really pleased if she won it, too.
Yes.
Yeah, I think they're both worthy of it. Another show that we reviewed and is going to get a ton of nominations for the limited series category is Big Little Lies, which was fantastic. We reviewed it. There were only a few episodes that were out. I went and watched it, and that's how you do drama and tension. I was literally shaking at the end of that show and could not get it out of my mind for a long time.
I can't get Gypsy out of my mind, but for the opposite reasons.
And what's interesting, too, about Big Little Lies, so the director, Jean-Marc Vallée, is also nominated as Outstanding Director. Shailene Woodley is nominated for Best Supporting Actress, and she was pretty amazing in that. You've got two actors in the same series nominated for Lead Actress, which I think is pretty spectacular. Reese Witherspoon and Nicole Kidman.
Who are both fantastic actresses.
In this one, I would have to give that to Nicole Kidman.
I've got a thing for Nicole Kidman. I'm biased.
Her performance in this one is really complex and challenging, and I like that about it, that there aren't easy answers in Big Little Lies. It doesn't end how you
think.
I think I've got to watch this.
And then Alexander Sarsgaard is also nominated, and I think he also deserves to win because he plays a really very challenging character. And I think he does it really well, that he is a monster that you sympathize with and are terrified about and has this growing menace and like instability to him. It's really good. So if you haven't seen Big Little Lies, outstanding performances, outstanding directing, outstanding writing also from David E. Kelley, outstanding made-for-TV movie. We reviewed The Immortal Life of Henrietta Lacks, and that is nominated as well.
Oh, so good. Another very, very good show.
And that should have had more nominations.
I think Oprah deserved a nomination. That scene where she's in the graveyard and it starts raining, and she has kind of a flashback episode, I think that is a really effective moment.
Oh, yes.
That reminds me of why she was nominated for an Academy Award.
I remember watching it, first of all. Then I remember reviewing it and talking to you about that scene and how much it affected me even then. Now thinking about it all these weeks later, I'm still struck by that particular scene from that film, about how powerful it was.
It was harrowing.
So I think really the takeaway here is there are so many good choices for streaming media. You do not need to saddle yourself with Gypsy. Let us take sticking that bullet for you.
Don't do it.
And spare you from it. Don't do it. It's not worth it.
I'm going to be so angry if Netflix picks Gypsy up for a second season.
I agree with you. I think it's crap. I won't be watching it again, and I'll be telling everyone, apart from just you listener, yes, you sitting in the back, don't think we can't hear you, I'll be telling everyone that I think how crap it is. If I'd known how much I was going to hate it, I would have like said, no, what was I doing?
Well, I wouldn't have nominated it. I apologize. Let me do my four-part apology. Let's work on my skills. I'm sorry that I nominated this film. It was wrong because it was really bad, and I inflicted it on you guys. Next time, I will choose a better thing to nominate. I hope you guys can forgive me.
I really appreciate that your apology did not apologize for me feeling bad about the show, that it actually took ownership for your actions and not my reaction to them. That was very good.
Using my skills that I try to teach children how to apologize effectively. I'm sorry.
And your apology also had an action plan in it.
Yes. It has a four-part apology, guys. Look it up. It's fabulous.
I didn't even know it was a thing. I was just like, that is a damn good apology.
Yes, it's good. You guys just feel so understood, and I'm genuinely, like, feel bad.
Don't tell me how I feel.
I feel like I have learned a skill that I can use in the future.
Yes. See? I'm such a good therapist, you guys.
But I won't.
But I won't, because I'm a selfish bastard. I feel like I've grown as a person in this short time we've had together.
If your therapist has slept with you, please report them.
And not to the letter page of Penthouse.
Don't write to Penthouse. Write their state board.
Making your way in the world today.
Takes everything you got.
Taking a break from all your worries.
Sure would help a lot.
Wouldn't you like to get away?
I would like to get away from Gypsy.
Yes, I wish to pretend it never existed. I'd like to compartmentalize that and put that away.
Mm-hmm. Let's do that.
I would like to shove this memory as far down in the hole as possible and never think about it again.
Okay, you guys visualize a box. Visualize what the box is made out of, what color it is, how it smells, and then just shove Gypsy, shove it in the box. Just push it down in the bottom and then close the lid and then lock it and then flush it down the toilet.
Wow. I feel better already. What were we reviewing again?
I don't know. Every week, we each bring a show to consider watching. We each vote for a show, and we cannot vote for our own show. The show with the most votes is our next show that we're going to watch and review.
I want to nominate The Ranch. It has scored a lot higher than another TV show that we were talking about. It feels like a century ago. And it's starring Ashton Kutcher. Mm-hmm. And it's a Netflix original, like House of Cards. And it's a sitcom, so there should be some really good ranch-based humor, I imagine. The important thing is, Sam Elliott and his moustache both star in this sitcom.
Also, he says fuck several times, and it's great.
Whoa. That sounds pretty good.
I am sold on this show, and I would very much like to watch it.
So I would like to nominate Castlevania. It's got things that we all like. There's lots of blood. There's good actors doing the voice acting, and they say fuck a lot. Let's go for it, guys.
I'm going to nominate a show that I want to nominate because I don't understand the subject matter. And I feel like I should. I think when you don't understand something, you should seek out to understand it before you can judge it.
You're so good.
The person who created this has personal experience with it and also has experience with TV shows, with creating them and writing for them with shows like Buffy the Vampire Slayer and so on. So I trust both their life experience and their artistic ability to take that experience and make it something relatable. And the show that I want to nominate is a movie called To the Bone, which is about anorexia.
Oh.
And the lead actress who is in this also has suffered from kind of some of those issues, and the show is supposed to be intense and disturbing and very good and very personal. I heard an NPR interview about it and I was spellbound.
Cool. We got a high fantasy drama, we've got a sitcom, and we've got a show about anorexia. All right, let's vote.
Alistair, you're first.
God, the agony of choice. I kind of want to watch Castlevania. I want an excuse to watch that. People have recommended it to me and said they really enjoyed it. I've seen To the Bone on my Netflix account. And with the greatest respect, Ryan, I'm sure it's very good, but I want to watch Castlevania.
I accept your decisions.
I am going to vote for The Ranch.
All right. So again, with things that I don't understand, I don't like or understand anime very much, but I love Castlevania. I love blood and people who say fuck a lot. So I think I'm also going to vote for Castlevania.
Yes, I get to host again and maybe do some penance for the sins that I have committed against
you. Shame. Shame.
Shame. Shame. Shame. Guys, I hope one day we review something about ships, and then I will be doing a Hannah. You will never, ever stop me talking about ships and things to do with the sea.
So that was the show which must not be named.
Voldemort TV.
The Voldemort of streaming media content. You can find all kinds of nerd shenanigans, including our other podcast, Four Color Nerds comic book reviews at fourcolornerds.com, or our Facebook page. You can follow us on Twitter and Instagram. You can find the podcast on iTunes and Google Play Music.
On Stitcher.
On SoundCloud.
And on Podcast Addict.
Be sure to rate,
review,
and subscribe.
Be sure to come back next week for another episode. Until then, keep streaming, nerds.